Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today on the HR Power Hour, we start a series of conversations with all the gubernatorial candidates for the state of Maine. And to kick this series off, today I have the honor of speaking with Governor Paula Page, Maine's 74th governor. As you may know, the governor is running for re-election in November and has graciously taken some time out of his busy schedule to be with us today. I am truly looking forward to discussing his vision for the next 4 years. This interview is designed to be a positive conversation where we focus on issues and concerns that business leaders, HR professionals, and employees care about today. I have some questions that not only I have created, but listeners have sent into our website, hrpowerhour.com, over the last few weeks. Also, I've reached out to the other two candidates in the gubernatorial race, and I'm happy to report that Elliot Cutler has accepted the invitation and will be my guest next weekend. We are working with the Mike Mishu campaign to get an interview as well. So let's get started. Governor Page, welcome to the HR Power Hour radio show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule. I'm sure you're enjoying campaigning.
It's called the hate season.
Well, I certainly understand. It's never fun, I'm sure, getting out there on the campaign trail.
Well, I tell you, I absolutely love talking to the people. It's what goes behind the scenes that I'm not very fond of.
No, I certainly understand. Well, you know, one of the questions that came up, and I can tell you a lot of these questions are not only some that I've created, but other audience members have sent in questions over the last couple weeks. One of them asked a simple question. They said, it's fair to say that Maine's economy has certainly improved over the last 4 years statistically. That said, some of the Mainers really don't necessarily say that they feel it. What can you say to them about what you've done over the last 4 years and what you might do in the next 4 years to make more Mainers feel the improvement?
Well, I think basically what we've done is we've brought a little bit of reliability and consistency to state government. We tell Mainers what we're going to do, and then we do it. For instance, we said we were going to reduce red tape, and we worked very hard at LD1 when we first came in, not to remove regulation or take regulations away, but to remove the red tape. We put in account execs, and account execs, if we have five people, then somebody comes in from out of state, want to start a created business here or hire people, we assign an account exec, and they speed them through the government process, the red tape. We've tried to take barriers down. We try to take the silos down and get the answers to them as quickly as possible. You know, in the private sector, coming from the business world, it's called customer service. So that's basically one of the big things that we've tried to do, is to provide better customer service for our people. And frankly, over 20,000 jobs now, we're approaching 22,000 jobs have been created since the start of my administration. The unemployment rate dropped to 5.5 from 8%. And over 61% of Mainers are working, which is one of the highest, and we lead the national average about people working. So what it's telling me is some of our simple little things, like telling people what you're going to do and do it and be consistent and reliable, is working. We've cut taxes, which affected two-thirds of the population. So everybody who is working is paying a little less income tax than they did before. And we're going to continue to do that into the second term. Our second term, what I'm looking at doing, is lowering the cost of doing business in the state of Maine. And the cost of doing business includes taxes. It includes energy costs, heating your homes and heating your business, electricity for your home, electricity for your business. So if you reduce all those operating costs, then more money is available to get into the paychecks of people working.
Well, you know, that leads me right into the second part of this question, which is you talk about the unemployment rate. It's certainly down to 5.5% from 6.6% a year ago. Could you outline maybe two or three of the top successes that you've done in the last year or so as to why you're seeing the unemployment rate dropping so much? What are some of the things that your administration is really doing? And then, if you would, what are you looking to do more in helping people find jobs in this next four-year period?
Well, one thing that we've done that's helping people find jobs is our welfare reforms. Welfare reforms, instead of just doing an intake and then sending them a check, we do an intake now. We assess their educational skills, and if they need additional skills in order to be able to find work in the jobs that are being offered, we send them to school. If they have the skill set necessary, we match it up with an employer. So that is very helpful. And that's only been going on in 2014, and that's already showing some great improvements. We have invested $2.5 million into the state infrastructure, so we're working. For instance, in Portland, we're putting an enormous amount of money, millions of dollars, into the port and into rail so that we have a more efficient home for IMSKIP, who is now shipping out of, importing, exporting right out of the port in Portland. That's a big, big effort that we've done. And, of course, we took the rail up north that was in bankruptcy, and we've got it back working, and that's created enormous amount of rail traffic in northern Maine. So we've done several things into our infrastructure and investing into our roads and bridges and railroad. In addition to, I've traveled all over the world talking to job creators to come to Maine. And we were successful in our first trip to China to get two new tissue machines in Woodland by Calus. One's going to be online in November and the next one next spring. IMSKIP has come since then. That's the Icelandic shipping company who moved from Newport, Virginia up to Portland, Maine. And so we are continuing to do this every single day. So we're looking. If they inquire, we put our account execs right on it, and we try to bring them into Maine. The thing we got to remember is we're not competing with other states. We're not competing with New England. We're competing with the world. So we have to be broad-minded and willing to travel to go interest people to move to Maine.
You know, in speaking with this world concept of going out and finding business, how can Maine do a better job competing against states like, for example, New Hampshire and others who do have a lower cost tax base in terms of, them coming in and maybe have some better infrastructure in terms of, travel and rail and so forth? I know it's improving, but where do you see Maine's, threshold where we can actually make a big difference in the next 4 years?
Where we make a big difference is we have to be willing to understand that investment capital goes where it's welcomed and stays where it's appreciated. And what I mean by that is, if you look at New Hampshire, for instance, New Hampshire in the southeast, Atlantic states, they are very, very competitive in incentives, in tax structure. For instance, Airbus is going to Alabama because Alabama is going to provide them energy at 4 cents a kilowatt hour, whereas in Maine it'd be 15. We have to become more competitive in our energy. South Carolina got Boeing, they got Michelin, and they got several other companies. And the reason they're getting them is they don't have an income tax. So our tax structure has to be formulated so it is attractive to people that want to invest in companies. For instance, last year I proposed to have a tax incentive for companies that would come in and create 1,000 jobs and invest $15 million. And the democratically controlled legislature voted it down. Well, unfortunately, those companies we were looking at are now in South Carolina. That was an idea that Boeing told us, if you want us to come to Maine, this is the type of things we're looking for. So we tried to structure it so we could attract these companies, and our legislature said no. Some of the other things that we need to do. Texas Instruments, for instance. I spoke to the CEO and I said, what can we do to help you buying National Semiconductor in Portland? He says, Governor, my biggest issue with Maine is I can't get my middle managers from our plants in Texas to take promotions in Maine because they look at Maine as a 8% cut in pay because of our income tax structure.
Right.
So what we need to do is we need to structure our taxes competitive with other states. Income tax is, many, many states now are looking at eliminating income tax and looking more to consumption and property taxes to fund their governments. And so we just need to look at ways that we can improve our customer service and structure our tax codes and our cost of doing business in Maine. Because we are where we're located, we have to be more competitive, and we need to get a look at things that we can reduce prices on. Energy is a simple one. Natural gas. Right now, we are pushing to go to bring natural gas to Maine on a pipeline. It would reduce our costs significantly in doing business and heating our homes. We are about a third higher than the national average. We can bring ourselves down to the national average, and we could be competing with the rest of the country. These are the things we need to do.
We're talking with Governor Paul LePage of the great state of Maine. Governor, one of the things that have come up is the question about Maine becoming a right-to-work state. This question comes up quite a bit and has either been, you know, talked down or talked up, depending who you talk to. What's your position on this? And if, in fact, it needs to be done, is this something you're going to push for in your next 4 years?
Well, I pushed it in the first, the 125th, the first session of 125th, and it was held over until the second session, and it died in the second session. The answer to your question is absolutely. If you take a look at right-to-work states around the country, their per capita income is about 4 to 5% higher than states that are not right-to-work. Michigan, for instance, the state of Michigan recently, the home of the automobile unions, some of the toughest unions in the country, has now gone right-to-work. Why? Because they realize what happened in Detroit. And certainly, I want to prevent against anything like that happening. The other thing that I will say to you is look around Maine and see we were number one paper producer in the United States, and we've slipped. And the tier one companies, the big companies, the IP, the Bulwaters, the Georgia-Pacific, the McMillan Bloedel companies, those are all gone. There's a reason why they've gone. It's the cost of doing business. And so we need to take a look at it. I'm a firm believer that Maine people are ready for it, with probably the exception of teachers and government. But I think the trades are seeing the value of going right to work. There have not been where the problem has been. The problem has been in municipalities and government unions and the teachers union.
I want to keep on this job creation theme we're talking about a little bit here.
Sure.
Statistically, unemployment rates are down in every county in the state versus last year. Right. I'm sure you agree, of course, that they are still too high, in over 7% in some of the northernmost counties, Aroostook, Pocatasquiz, Somerset, Washington County. How do you propose we solve this, what I would call the North versus South Maine differential?
Wonderful. I've been speaking about that for 2 weeks now. Every day I go out, we have Northern Massachusetts and Maine. I mean, we still have that. We have the Southern counties that are much more prosperous than many of the counties. We have two counties, maybe three, you could argue three counties are doing very well, and then you have either 13 or 14 counties that are way behind the eight ball. I think the rural economies, like, take Fort Kent, our agriculture, potato production is down from 150,000 acres 25 years ago down to, I was told this year, a little less than 50,000. And so you have Washington County has got a much higher unemployment rate. We need to do things to attract investment. There's no question about it. In order to do that, we have to focus on two issues. One is when you attract companies or you attract an investor and you want to create jobs, you have to make sure that your workforce is ready. And so we need to do some work in our more sparsely populated counties about getting the skill sets that are necessary to do the jobs of the 21st century. That's one major issue. And the other thing is you're going to have to be a private-public partnership. If you're going to be located in Maine, We have to make sure that we have a public-private partnership with the job creators because they want to be appreciated. They're going to make big investments. And that goes back with the cultural shift that we have to make, that business is not bad, business is good, and good employers are hard to find. So when you find them, you have to appreciate them. Now, we have good employers. And we have in the southern part of the state, in fact, there's some fantastic technologies that are being, products are being produced with the advanced technologies in the southern part of the state. We just need to make sure that we can interest people to go to the northern part of the state. We're talking now to some Chinese companies that could conceivably put in 1,000 jobs up north. I'm going Thursday to cut ribbons for two companies. One is a very high-end, technologically advanced sawmill, and then a re-energy company that's gone from a southern state to Maine. But that's based on the raw material that we have in the state. And so it's this whole cultural shift that we have to provide more than just the skilled workers. We have to provide, we have to have culture, we have to have the willingness to work with job creators. And that's been a real challenge in Maine, particularly the last 40 years when we've been a state that's not been very positive to job creators.
You know, you talk about companies must compete today, and they certainly do. And whether real or perceived, the shortage of tech-savvy people has certainly affected the way companies do business. There is a skills gap, or a perceived skills gap, and it certainly is exacerbated by the fact that we have an older workforce in Maine as well, right? I mean, we are the oldest state in the nation.
That's correct.
So how do we solve that dilemma when we have those two major issues, and how do you suggest we do that over the next 4 years?
Well, two projects that we're working on. One is to interest kids and students to take a look at the STEM education, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. And we're working to devise a scholarship program for those kids that want to study the science, technology, engineering, and math fields, that we have scholarships for them to help on the cost of higher education, both from the standpoint of Maine kids, but other kids coming in to the state. So we need to find a way to lower the cost of educating in the jobs, skill sets that we need for the future jobs, the high-tech jobs. That's one area. The other area, and most importantly, because you just said it, we're an old state, our workforce is getting older by the day, and our kids are leaving us in droves because of a variety of different reasons. One, we don't have the jobs here, ready here, and our tax structure is such that those that have a nest egg and they approach retirement, they leave for 6 months and a day because they don't want to pay the high tax structure. So we need to do something else. So we're trying to devise a program, and we are working on it as we speak, to interest people, young people, to come and work in Maine, and we will help pay off their student loans, the medical field, the engineering fields, and to try to attract a younger workforce. You have to import people. You know, right now the state of Maine has more people dying than being born, and that's because we're all getting older. So we have to have young people here to develop a farm team, so to speak. We got to develop our own, and in addition to that, we got to attract young people to come and do the jobs that we have available in Maine. And how do you do that? Is all kids getting out of school now with the high cost of education? We need to look at student loans, and if we can find employers, for instance, you could do a tax structure where as an employer helps in paying off student loans, he gets a full tax credit. Well, it's good for the business, good to attract young people. So we're looking at those areas. I don't know how it's going to end up. I know that we need to do something, and we are looking at two or three areas where we can try to bring younger people to Maine. Once they get here, it's not hard keeping them because we have a beautiful state, but it's hard to get them here if you don't have the programs in place.
No, you're absolutely correct, Governor. There's no question about that. You know, you brought up in this discussion the higher education costs. College has never been more expensive. And, you know, you can hear it whether you're talking about student loan debt or if you're just hearing it from parents every day, right, that are dealing
correct
with this issue. And there really doesn't appear to be any end in sight in terms of increases to higher education. Do you see a role in government in focusing on this area and dealing with the cost of education at the front end? I understand you're talking about tax credits at the back end. I like the idea. I'm just simply saying, how do we deal with this cost continually going up for middle America in terms of the cost of higher education?
Well, there's two things we have to do. Immediately, day one, is we have to stop the concept that every single child born in Maine is going to go to a four-year university and get a professional degree. Number one is we have taken the vocational education in Maine and thrown it in the back of the school. We have to bring it back to the front of the school. You know, we need plumbers, electricians, carpenters, mechanics, draftsmen. We need printers. We need people to do the jobs that we have currently available. And those, we have an enormous shortage. So we need to just go back to the trade jobs. And, for instance, the schools have to recognize that trades are good. We have a young man who graduated from a vocational school, from high school. He was a welder, took a welding trade. He went on to skills competition, was the best welder, 18-year-old welder in Maine. He went on to the national skills competition, was the best 18-year-old welder in the United States. Came back home, tried to get into community college, was rejected because they give you no credit for welding. That's a real, real problem.
Yeah, that
real
is.
Significant problem. So I believe we need to take a hard, hard look at vocational and technical schools so that the CTEs and the community colleges work much closer together. And they work at providing kids with really good paying jobs. Auto mechanics now can make $35, $40 an hour because they're all highly computerized. It's an automated world we live in. So each trade, manufacturing now, I went into a golf tee manufacturer last week and you could eat off the floor. I mean, that's what technology has done. So we have to recognize that. That's number one. Number two is we have to do a better job K through 12. 52% of the kids that graduate from high school in Maine who apply to community college have to take remedial work. You can't have a school system where you have to pay for your education twice and expect the cost of higher education to go down. Most kids get out of high school, go to community college. Granted, community college is a lot cheaper, but 52% of our kids have to take courses for a year or two in order to get into a four-year program. Not acceptable. Absolutely not acceptable. And the people who are falling behind are the teachers and the students, because the teachers aren't given the resources for the classroom. We spend too much money on the administration, far too less money in the classroom. We give the teachers what they need to teach, and then we pay our teachers better. You get better teacher, better quality teacher by finding mentors. Mentors will inspire kids to learn. Teachers are a dime a dozen. You need better teaching, and how do you do that? You raise the rate and you demand a better performance.
Employers today are looking at mentoring, for example, when they're using older and younger workers, one, to learn the culture, two, to learn the business, right? You get that partnership between the older and the younger worker.
Absolutely.
This also manifests itself in employers working with universities and colleges to try to partner to get what they need. In talking to organizations like Chimbro and some of the others, they're really trying to find partnerships with organizations so that they can get the talent and skills that they need. Should government be involved in that?
Yes, and that's why we're saying the area that government can be involved is to be take a broader look at the entire education system, like I mentioned earlier, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. We can help. Where government is really important is we can bring in these employers that are looking for certain skills and then bring in the teachers and the schools to come in and to lock in on the types of programs they need. I will tell you who's doing it wonderfully is Maine Maritime Academy. Maine Maritime Academy is one of the best bargains in the United States, as it was just seen in Money Magazine. And their kids are graduating and getting into six digits within a year or two. Some graduate and get right into six digits. So if you provide the quality education and what the market demands, the students will find great jobs. And so I'm saying that government can be part of getting the private sector and the public education systems together, dialogue, and they can make partnerships where they can get the skills they need from the students. And we're trying to do that. Brunswick Landing now has got the community college on the old base, and they've got the University of Maine. So they're working there to see what these companies that are being attracted to that area, what do they need for skill sets so they can prepare the students for them. But we need to do it statewide.
We're talking with the governor of Maine, Paula Page. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back on News Talk WLOB. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
They say it's never too late to be what you might have been. So if you want to turn your passion into your profession, AARP can help you find new opportunities that take advantage of Work Reimagined, a program that leverages the power of LinkedIn. AARP also provides access to tools, resources, and information that can help you at every step. Just a few of the ways AARP helps turn your goals and dreams into real possibilities.
AARP, real possibilities.
Go to aarp.org/possibilities to find tools and guidance.
Real Possibilities is a trademark of AARP.
You might hear some advice from your friends on choosing a health plan.
Darling, you must choose the gold healthcare plan.
Not the silver plan. Too much trouble. Do they have a stainless steel plan? I like bronze, like my tan. Are sunburns covered? Instead, take advice from a licensed agent from Northern Insurance Group. Meet face-to-face with a local healthcare exchange professional. Call Northern Insurance Group today. We have the resources to make sure you make the right choice.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com. Our sponsors for today's show, AARP, taking on issues that matter. Northern Insurance Group, meeting your business, commercial, and personal insurance needs. Sheehan Finney Bass & Green, innovative approaches and practical solutions. And the law firm of Jackson Lewis, all we do is work. We're talking with the governor of Maine, Paula Page. One of the other issues, the governor, that has certainly come up in the last few years, and I can't see anything changing, is the cost of health care. Employers are dealing with this, and it's certainly a huge concern whether you're a large employer or a small employer, and it's a major factor. You can hear from CEOs and owners this uncertainty when it comes to this cost. How can you as governor, how can your administration help employers deal with this critical issue over the next 4 years?
Well, what we can do and what we have been doing is employers are faced with a real difficult dilemma now because the ACA, or sometimes called Obamacare, is law of the land. In that, it needs to get some modifications. It needs to be some tweaking. And I don't believe it's going away anytime soon. So we just need to fix the areas we need to fix. From a state's program, we had PL 90 3 years ago. We saw it being a great piece of legislation that was helping to lower the cost of premiums. But when ACA came in, it doesn't allow it to function the way it was initially designed. So we have to go back and look at what's good about that program and enhance it so that it works within the ACA. But most importantly, we have to take a broader view of the entire healthcare system. We have to look at the infrastructure that we have in place. We have to take a look at making sure that we can provide quality care at a lower cost. For instance, right now, insurance companies will tell you, if you take your main people and they go to Boston, they'll get quality care at a lower price. Why? Because Maine is a sparsely populated state with 1.3 million people in a very large geography, and we just don't have enough people right now with the infrastructure we have in the ground. So we have to start looking more at things like telemarketing, telemedicine. We have to make sure that we take care of the full person, the entire body, not just the physical body, but the mental part. So we have to take care of a full person. Right now, we don't do that in Maine. We don't do it. The dental is separated. The mental health is separated. And the physical primary care physicians, we have a shortage. There we have to take a look at that. I believe University of New England is doing a great job getting primary care physicians. We just need to make sure that there's resources available so that these physicians can do their residency in Maine and not have to leave Maine. The minute a resident finds a place in Vermont or Connecticut or New Hampshire or Massachusetts, and they do their residency there for 2 or 3 years, it's hard to get them back. We have to get Maine hospitals to find a way to get the students placed in residencies right here in Maine, so we'll get rid of the shortage. That will help lower cost. We need to make sure that our infrastructure is, you know, one size fits all, or one hospital doing everything is not going to work, so we need to get into telemedicine. Everybody's agreeing that we could do so much more if we were communicating a lot better. So there's a million different things, many things we can do, but we got to be able to convince ourselves of one thing, which is the hardest thing I've seen as a governor, is to think outside the box. Just because you're doing it one way doesn't mean it's got to be that way forever. Let's look at different ways, try different things, look at other models. Our country was based on 50 states, 50 laboratories. And so the federal government puts one program together and says one size fits all. It doesn't work. Let's look at what works around the other states, and let's formulate a healthcare program that works for everybody.
You know, one of the things that I know employers talk about is that there needs to be more competition in the health insurance and healthcare markets. How do we attract more companies to Maine?
Well, it's very simple. Companies in the private sector need to look at a profit, and until we get to the point where profit is not a dirty word, then we're not going to attract them. And I think that's one thing ACA can do, because it does allow for a profit motive. But we don't have the critical mass necessary to make it truly profitable. So that's why we have to. That's why you've seen a lot of the bigger hospitals buy up the little ones, and you're seeing that type of stuff happening. And then Maine has what is called local control. And local control is very good, and we all love it. But we have to understand that it's very, very expensive to continue local control. We are competing with all 50 states. We are competing, you know, with Florida, for instance, where they have county government where it's real strong and local government is real weak. Well, you got to figure out ways to do it better with less, and you have to become competitive. You can't do it if you want to stay in status quo and just look for what you're doing now and improve what you're doing now. Sometimes you have to change the model. You have to reinvent yourself, and we're not willing to reinvent ourselves. And until we do that, we're going to be struggling.
Was that one of your biggest surprises in the last 4 years, the resistance to change?
No question. Last year when we tried to make a small modification to revenue sharing, and every community in the state went crazy, and you're going to bankrupt us, and we looked at it. But at the end of the day, This is what we were going to do. We were going to reduce revenue sharing by $30 million over local revenues of $3.6 billion. So if you do the math, it's less than 1%. But people all went crazy because that's what they're used to doing. They weren't recognizing that many of the things we were doing were going to make it cheaper at and less expensive for the communities. But that, like, for instance, I think we ought to take Public Works and move it up to a more of a county program rather than a little community program. I compare it to Lewiston versus where I was mayor in Waterville. Lewiston, they have a city manager, a superintendent, public works director, police chief, fire chief, and a tax assessor. Six people. I was the mayor of Waterville. So you take Waterville, Winslow, Fairfield, and Oakland. They all abut each other. It's four towns. Take what they do in Lewiston, six people times four. So you got 24 people doing the same work for 36,000 people that Lewiston's doing for 36,000 people. So I think that we've got to get ourselves out of this local control, and we got to understand that local control, if we want to keep it, and I'm not against doing that if you want to keep it, but we have to understand that local control is a very costly process. It's a very costly model, and if we want to keep it, then we have to be willing and ready to pay the high cost.
Employers are dealing with the issue of drugs in the workplace. The Maine medical marijuana law, for example, currently in effect. And now we have on the ballot this year three communities in the state looking to recreationally use marijuana. Portland already, of course, in the city has approved it. What's your stance on this, and how do employers deal with these type of issues over the next few years?
I think it's a very significant problem. If we do not allow, you know, drinking is legal in the United States. Many employers make it illegal in the workplace. We have to be cognizant that if marijuana alters your thought process, your ability to think and do your job, you're going to have to outlaw it. Personally, this is how I feel. Recreational marijuana is like a cigarette. We're trying to get people to stop smoking. Why are we making marijuana legal? The smoke is bad for your lungs.
Well, you know, you're absolutely correct. I mean, one of the things...
My feeling is if smoking is bad, then recreational marijuana is bad for your lungs. Now, you make it legal, and 5 years from now, we're going to have cessation programs to get people off marijuana because the people are dying of lung cancer.
Well, it certainly is an issue, and I mean, it really is something that employers are dealing with because, you know, laws protect employees from having to deal with asking questions, a lot of questions to employees. And these are just issues that are real in terms of what employers are dealing with right now.
Let me tell you, every truck driver in the state of Maine has to take random testing for drugs.
That's right, it's federal, DOT.
We're going to be forcing every employer in the state of Maine to force every employee in the state of Maine to take random testing to make sure they're not on some forms of drugs. I don't see it as a win-win. I'm hearing from some of my colleagues in other states, like I'll tell you, Washington State and Colorado, while they're legalized it statewide, they're having massive problems in the workplace.
Do you think that the lobby, which has been very solid here in across the country dealing with marijuana, they don't really want to hear or talk about that, do they? I mean, they really want to just talk
about the smoke, because they say it can be put in other forms. Maybe it can be. But the fact of the matter, if marijuana alters the brain so that you are not at the top of your game in the workplace, it's dangerous.
Governor, and again, we're talking with Governor Paula Page of the great state of Maine. One of the other things that have come up, and I know I've heard a lot about it, and I'm sure you have heard it as well, has to do with the minimum wage. Now, the city of Portland, for example, is talking about next year raising the minimum wage to $9.50 an hour. That's a plan being developed by the mayor and, of course, the city task force. Some even say it's not enough, though. Really, you got to get up to $15 an hour.
It's fine.
What's your position on the minimum wage? Is it a living wage or is it minimum wage?
I think the minimum wage, if the federal government raises minimum wage, that's where it needs to be done. It cannot be done on individual states because you're going to be put in competition against each other. For instance, if I don't believe Portland can do it, constitutionally, certainly the Constitution Maine prevents it, so they're going to have to deal with that issue. But let's put that aside, and let's just look at minimum wage. If we do it as a nation, that's one thing. If we do it as individual states, then we're being anti-business. And what I mean by that, let's take a look at Maine, for instance. Maine's the oldest state in the union. We have a lot. We have a per capita. We have more retired people than any other state in the union. If you raise the minimum wage, let's say from $7.50 to $10 or $15, and the elderly, and I get letters all the time from elderly saying, "Don't raise the minimum wage because I won't be able to go get my Dunkin' Donuts coffee and my donut and talk to my friends every day." That's one issue we have to deal with. The other issue is, if we're the only state in the union at $10 or $15, and let's say New Hampshire doesn't go, and Vermont doesn't go, and Massachusetts doesn't go, it's going to be pretty hard to attract business to Maine if we're 30% higher, and we're already one of the highest costs of doing businesses in the country. And if you add it to labor, then where do we go to be profitable and to be competitive? We have high energy costs. We have high taxes. Now we're going to make it high cost of living. Do you think our kids are going to stay around and pay the highest heating costs, highest taxes, and only make $3 or $4 more? Rather than talk about minimum wage, why don't we go about talking about career wages, wages that we can live on? Attract businesses like Airbus, who pay $75 an hour, $48 in wages and the rest in benefits. Why don't we get high-tech companies, IT companies, that come in and pay their people $35 an hour, $30 an hour, instead of $10 an hour? Because technology has moved so fast, and the skill sets that we require are very automated, so why don't we go for automated companies like, let's get Google up here. Everybody working for Google. There's not a lot of people there, but they make a lot of money. So my point is, rather than chase down minimum wage jobs, let's chase down high-paying jobs. And to tell you, to be frank about it, right now there's roughly 6,000 people in the state of Maine that make minimum wage. The overwhelming majority of companies in Maine pay above minimum wage. You can't hire anybody at minimum wage in Maine.
One of the things that, you know, I know you're very passionate about is the fact that you enjoy hearing Maine residents say the words, "Hey, I'm going to work." What does that mean to you, Governor, the words when you hear from Maine people who are finally going back to work, "Hey, I got a job, thank you"?
The only way to get out of poverty is education and a good job. I struggled early on in my life in poverty, and I will tell you, what saved my life was an education. Once I get an education, my earning power increased every day. Every time, the smarter I get, the higher my value is. So I believe people working, we can help to eradicate poverty. We can get people back to work. We have to provide them a better education, and we have to provide them an opportunity for a good job. A good job will solve a lot of sins.
One of the other issues, and again, we're talking with Governor Paula Page, again, from the state of Maine. And again, I want to thank you very so much for being on the show with me today.
I appreciate it.
You know, one of the things that employers are dealing with is immigration. And look, there are employers that need immigrants to come into the state to do things. There are also issues with hiring illegal immigrants that are happening in this state. What's your position on this whole issue, and how do you help employers deal with what you would call the mess that sometimes happens when these situations occur?
Well, the issue is business people who need folks to come to work, and I hear it every day. As I speak to you right now, there are 8,000 jobs in Maine that are gone unfilled. Those are the ones that are recorded and we know about. You drive up and down Main Street of any community and you'll see signs that say, "Now hiring." I see it all over the place. The Big Apple, or you see it at Dunkin' Donuts, you see it at Tim Hortons, you see it most every place you go. Any community you go to, you can see "Now hiring jobs." And my point is very simply this. If we have a problem, with people, and there's a lot of illegals here, then change the law. Fix it. Fix the law. The problem is we send people to Washington that are unwilling to make difficult decisions. I find that here in the state. They're unwilling to make tough decisions. And what I mean by that is there are only three types of bills that I have vetoed in the last 4 years. They all fall under three buckets. One is resolves. A resolve is we don't want to make a tough decision, so let's study it another year. Push it on to the next legislature. That's common. That's usually 200 or 300 a year. And then it's been dying down more and more until 2012 when the election came around, that the opposition likes to throw resolves just at me so I can get more vetoes. But basically, that's how it works. I mean, they just want to do resolves. The other thing is unfunded mandates. They throw unfunded mandates. We will do this, but we're not going to pay for it. I think that those have to go up there into a bucket. And then there's tax increases. The point I'm trying to make here is if we have a problem, why are we fixing it? And until we fix it, we have to honor the laws that are on the books. And so right now, the laws on the books is illegal immigrants cannot work. Now, I feel for the employers, and the employers, while it's very difficult and it's very costly, have opportunities to talk to the federal government and get work programs. I mean, all the agricultural people, the broccoli people and the potato people and the apple people, they can go to the federal government and get work programs and bring in foreign workers. But those are not the illegals. They're here legally. We can do that. I just urge the federal government, fix the problem once and for all, and let's move on. We fixed it in 1986. We had a problem under Ronald Reagan. They fixed it. I don't think that they totally fixed it. They gave it a Band-Aid, and now we're in a bigger mess. We need to do a permanent fix. Secure our borders and let so many people in a year. There's a great big long list of people waiting for green cards. I had a son. It took us 11 years to get him a card legally. He could have come in 11 years ago and just jumped the fence. There's no fence. He could have just walked across. So my point is, much of it is the lack of will to fix.
Do you think that that is a national issue or a state issue? I asked that
because national issue, but the border states have to be diligent in reminding our congressional delegations that they need to fix it. We're a border state. Anyone that's a border state has a problem. So I do think that you've got to fix it nationally. In fact, they tell us we have to fix it nationally. It's a national issue.
Governor, what was the two things that you would say are your biggest accomplishments for, you know, your last 4 years in office?
Biggest accomplishment is paying the hospitals is number one, and we paid the hospitals by bringing the liquor business back into the state. So instead of getting paid $100 million at one-time shot, we're going to be getting $50 million every year going forward. I think that's a massive, massive accomplishment that very little talk about. You never read it in newspapers, but I think those two issues were major, major contributions to the state. And the other one that never gets any play from the press, but I think is really a big thing for the state of Maine, is we have made a major cultural change. That customer service from state employee is significantly better today than it was 4 years ago. I hear it every day. Businesses, other nonprofit organizations, they call the state, and I get emails all the time and letters saying, wow, it's amazing. We called you, and your people responded. So we are trying to make customer service a way of life.
You know, as we wind down this interview, and again, I want to thank you for being on the HR Power Hour today. Wanted to give you an opportunity to really talk to the employers and employees in the state of Maine and maybe tell them why they should vote for you and reelect Paula Page as their governor.
Well, basically, it's very simply this. First of all, I was not a trained politician. I need to tell you all that, and I think you see that every day reading newspapers because I've eaten a lot of leather lately. But that's okay, too, because I learned from my mistakes. My learning curve has been quick, it's been harsh, and I know this state very well. Going forward, this is what I will do. I think that we need to look at our energy, both electricity and natural gas. We have to make sure that we bring natural gas to the state of Maine. We have to find a cheaper source of electricity. We have to take all options available, put them in the hat, and prioritize them by the lowest cost first. I truly believe we can be a leader in energy if we work at it. Secondly, I do think that we have a head start on our education. We understand where we need to go. We're emulating some of the successful states, and we are moving towards putting more emphasis on STEM so that the jobs of the future, the high-tech jobs and the technology jobs, and right now, anything you manufacture, food you make, is most of it is all high-tech. So we need to move our education system. We got to prepare our students to make sure they can do the jobs of the future. And finally, I think we finally have state employees looking outside of the box. Now we have to get all of Maine to look outside the box and take a look at status quo and see if there is a better way to do it. If we get stuck in status quo and we remain there and we say this is the way we've always done it, we're going to continue to struggle as an economy. We need, and I can do it, to continue the path that we're on. We've started changing moving the ship. The ship is moving in the right direction. We just got stuck in mud here in the last 2 years. We need to change that. I think the first 2 years of my administration, the overwhelming majority of the changes were made. Last 2 years, we've been playing defense. I think I deserve another shot at fixing the problem. And the state of Maine has to understand this. Your vote makes a difference. Who you send to Augusta is who you get that votes in and votes out laws. So it's very critical to be very diligent and hold everybody you elect, hold their feet to the fire. If they claim they're going to do something, make sure they do it. And I say that, along with the track record we developed, I think I deserve another shot.
The last question, Governor, was actually given to me through the HR Power Hour website. And I thought it was a good question to end as we started on talking about the campaign. And it's, what's the most memorable thing you've seen on the campaign trail?
I just got a letter from a young man in middle school, and he said that I'm his hero. And the most memorable thing is how he said it and why he said it. He said, "You have strong shoulders, and my parents say that you shoulder all the complaints, but you move ahead, and we're getting better." And he thanked me for all the work we did. And I'll tell you, for a 9-year-old to tell you that, it's worth working every day.
Thank you very much, Governor Paula Page. Again, Maine's 74th governor. I want to thank you so much for your service for the state.
And 75th.
And 75th. All right. Thank you for taking the time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Governor.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Next week on the HR Power Hour, independent candidate for governor, Elliot Cutler, continues our gubernatorial series. We are going to be talking to him about his vision for the next 4 years. We not only ask questions that I've written, but we answer questions from business leaders, HR professionals, and employees. So that's next week on the HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.